must be adopted in a special session. And the state legislature violates that and adopts the redistricting plan during a regular session. Is that a substantive decision if the state court strikes it down, or is it a procedural one? Well, the attorney for the state legislature said that is a procedural decision. And that just seems really, no, I'm sorry, he said that it's a substantive decision, and it seems really, really odd because it's clearly procedural. It has nothing to do with what's in the plan. Instead, it has something to do with how the plan is adopted. So the substance procedure distinction is just not a clear one, and I think Justice Coney Barrett really had a problem with that. So it is entirely possible coming out of this, you can have some version of the theory, but not necessarily the strong version of the theory that is arguably preferred by the more conservative justices.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Vernita Tolson, for joining us and explaining this. I think for most people, it sounds just like sort of a legal gobbledygook, but it absolutely has such a critical effect on voting in the United States, and we'll continue to follow it. Professor Tolson teaches law at the University of Southern California Gould School of Law. That does it for our show. On Friday, Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez will be speaking at the CUNY School of Labor and Urban Studies at 3 p.m. and on Monday at 6:30 p.m. at the CUNY Graduate Center. He'll be talking about the history of Latinos in America. Visit democracynow.org for all details. I look forward to seeing folks there as we all listen to Juan. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets quarterly on the second Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
When Selma James founded the Wages for Housework campaign 50 years ago, it certainly had its detractors. Indeed, some people simply freaked out at the idea. They argued, why should anyone be paid for what women are expected to do for free? And anyway, is caregiving work done in the home real work? Isn't it just done for love? It might be hard work, but is it productive work? Does anyone make money off all that free labor? And to be productive members of society, they argued, one needed to get a job at the point of production. Well, some may call it the point of exploitation. Well, recall the other set of free labor? It was called slavery. And did anyone profit from it? You bet. But seriously, not to compare doing unpaid caregiving work to chattel slavery, but the reality is that unpaid caregiving work is productive work that produces trillions of dollars worldwide and billions in the United States. An Oxfam estimate puts the dollar value of women's unpaid care work at $10.8 trillion annually. You heard that. That's three times the size of the world's tech industry. Yet from single mothers on welfare to women in waged work in frantic need of quality care, to families trying to get the child tax credit extended, to housewives who are working full-time in the home, to elders who fear being shunted away and living in poverty after a lifetime of work can testify, when any of us demand any resources or, God forbid, money for all of our work, we're told the till is empty. Nothing for you, sister or brother, for those men who are doing the primary caregiving work. But guess what? There's plenty of money for war and occupation, not for child tax credits, not for paid family leave. Today, we bring you a conversation between Selma James and me, that marked the 50th anniversary of the Wages for Housework campaign. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested.
We won!
Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock has defeated Republican challenger Herschel Walker in a runoff election in Georgia. He becomes the first black senator to win a full Senate election in the state, defeating a Trump-backed challenger by more than 80,000 votes.
It is my honor to utter the four most powerful words ever spoken in a democracy. The people have spoken.
Warnock's victory gives Democrats an outright majority on the chamber for the rest of President Joe Biden's current term. That means Democrats won't have to negotiate a power-sharing deal with Republicans or bow to West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin, who stalled legislation that addresses climate change and President Joe Biden's ambitious Build Back Better agenda. Top House and Senate leaders have bestowed Congress's highest honor on law enforcement officers who defended the U.S. Capitol from the deadly January 6th siege by Trump supporters Monday, Edwin J. Vieira reports.
D.C. Police Chief Robert J. Conte III spoke about how the officers will never forget that day.
Many of us still carry the physical, mental, and emotional scars after that mob of thousands launched a violent assault in an attempt to halt the counting of electoral ballots.
Representative Benny Thompson, chair of the House subcommittee investigating the attacks, said criminal referrals will be made based on the committee's findings. A report is expected to be released sometime before Christmas. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
A Manhattan jury has convicted Donald Trump's company, the Trump Organization, of tax fraud. Prosecutors outlined a scheme by top executives to avoid paying personal income taxes on perks such as apartments and luxury cars. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg said the verdict underscores, in Manhattan, there's one standard of justice for all.
This was a case about lying and cheating, false documents to the end of evading taxes for the benefit of individuals and the corporations. They've now been held accountable in a court of law right here in Manhattan.
A jury found two corporate entities at the Trump Organization guilty on all 17 counts, including conspiracy charges and falsifying business records. The Trump Organization could be fined up to $1.6 million. Trump himself was not on trial, but prosecutor Joshua Steinglass insisted Donald Trump explicitly sanctioned the tax fraud. The Trump Organization's lawyer has vowed to appeal. Independent Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders says he will bring a war powers resolution to the Senate floor as early as next week that would block U.S. support for the Saudi-led war on Yemen, which has been called the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Sanders told the publication The Intercept he likely has a support to pass the resolution. Some 23 million people have been severely impacted by the civil war, despite a current ceasefire. The United Nations top humanitarian official says they're providing more than 630,000 Ukrainians with different kinds of direct winter assistance, and 400 generators have been distributed to critical facilities amidst Russia's war on the country, blasting its infrastructure into a near nationwide power outage. Martin Griffiths spoke before the United Nations Security Council Tuesday.
The attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure, including power stations and heating plants, have left millions of people without access to heat, electricity, and water, adding another dangerous dimension to the humanitarian crisis caused by the war.
Russia's ambassador Vasily Nebenzia told the council the Ukrainian people are being used by the West and the criminal Ukrainian regime, he called it, as cannon fodder. Officials in Germany say thousands of police officers have carried out raids across the country against suspected far-right extremists who allegedly sought to overthrow the government in an armed coup. Federal prosecutors said some 3,000 officers conducted searches at 130 sites in 11 of Germany's 16 states today against members of the so-called Reich Citizens Movement. They say 22 German citizens were detained on suspicion of membership in a terrorist organization. Three others, including a Russian citizen, were held on suspicion of supporting the group. Officials have repeatedly warned far-right extremists pose the biggest threat to Germany's domestic security. In the U.S., a suspect accused of fatally shooting 5 people and wounding 17 at a Colorado Springs gay nightclub was formally charged with 305 criminal counts Tuesday, including hate crimes and murder. The attack came on the eve of an annual day of remembrance for transgender people lost to violence. According to defense lawyers, the suspect is non-binary and uses they/them pronouns. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio.
Those were our news headlines. The COVID pandemic laid bare for the world to see what every mother knows, what every primary caregiver knows. Raising children is work. Caregiving is work. And when we do caregiving outside the home, it is low paid because, after all, caregiving is work that is generally expected to be done for no pay at all. But enter Johnny Tillman, a Black mother out of Watts in South Los Angeles, California, who was a national president of the National Welfare Rights Organization. She, in 1965, called for payment for what today we refer to as caregiving work. And enter Selma James, who in 1972, who first put forward the demand for wages for housework. Since then, the terrain has changed. Pushed by the Wages for Housework campaign and its supporters, the United Nations has as one of its sustainable development goals counting and valuing caregiving work, but no money for it, no payment for it. Now, however, there is a global campaign for a care income for those caring for people and the land. Way before my journalism days, I co-founded Black Women for Wages for Housework. The Wages for Housework campaign marks its 50th anniversary this month. So let us now go to excerpts from a conversation between Selma James and myself to mark that anniversary. That conversation was held on Thursday, March 24th.
In 1972, I put forward Wages for Housework. Most of the women at the conference where I put it forward were very hostile to the idea of wages for housework, the idea that women should not necessarily go out to work because they felt, in general, that women's consciousness would be raised. Well, I thought everybody's consciousness would be raised if women had a higher voice, and they would if they had some money of their own. And that the problem that women faced, in the women that I knew in my immediate surroundings, was that we were poorer, we had no money of our own, and we were responsible for giving birth to and training and bringing to the world the whole human race, but had no autonomy of our own. We were dependent most of the time on men, sometimes on welfare, but we were poor and dependent and producing the whole human race. And that had to be unfair. And it also had to be central to our condition as women, which we had formed a movement to do something about. So I beginning with Johnson Forest, beginning with the grassroots, we began to talk to women about the situation, but about their situation. And we found immediately, even as we left the next conference, where feminists had fundamentally turned us down, A woman came to me and said, look, they're taking family allowance away from women, and that's wages for housework, isn't it? Well, I knew that women got family allowance between for every child after the first in the UK. And this was the first time I was brought to understand that it was threatened. And the idea that family allowance was for a form of wages for housework, I hadn't really not thought of it. I hadn't understood all the ins and outs of wages for housework because I'd merely put it out and hoped to discuss it. And I saw immediately that we could form an organization, a network to fight to keep family allowance. We did immediately that day, started to organize together, and we won. We won the money, but in the course of winning that money, we understood what that money meant to women. And even women who were against women having wages for housework, they had to agree that we had to fight to keep that money that women said was the only money they could call their own. So that's how we kind of plunged into being an organization for women, for all women. We understood more and more about the international network that we had to build. So we were setting out to build an international network and to understand all the ways in which women are exploited and all the ways which were hidden from us, which women organized to fight against this situation and to fight for their families and to fight for even for financial independence for themselves, but fight even in the great independence movement, the anti-imperialist movement, which was the largest movement the world had ever seen.
Thank you so much, Selma. It is really an honor and a pleasure to be here with you. We've been through so much together for so many years. And as Nina has said, for me, it's not quite 50 years. The 50 years really is you, Selma. I co-founded Black Women for Wages for Housework a few years after that. But I just wanted to share a little bit with you all about what led me to Wages for Housework and what led me to co-found Black Women for Wages for Housework. And I really have to start by uplifting my sister, by the way, is on the call. She's listening in today. My partner, my daughter, for all of their support. Also, all of the ancestors that came before me on the continent of Africa, in Barbados, I understand some in Ireland as well, because I hope that I have earned what I think was expected, which is to work for justice and freedom. So I just wanted to open by saying that. And also for all of the villagers that I left at home in Barbados, my island nation of Barbados, who are still there, and all of my sisters and brothers in the Wages for Housework campaign, the Global Women's Strike, women of color in the Global Women's Strike in the United States, but also in so many different parts of the world, and growing in Thailand, in Myanmar, Haiti. Always, always have to uplift my sister Andaye, who would have loved to have been here today. But it's really my experience in the village, watching the way the women worked there, whether it was Nana Marson from across the street, who really was a full-time housewife, worked tirelessly, you know, for the 9 or 10 children, I think she had. Women who worked in the home and who also worked in the fields. And then there were some women who worked in town. But all of those women, whatever they did, their first job in the home, cooking the food and taking care of the children, was an enormous amount of work. And of course, they got absolutely nothing for it. So when I ran into Wages for Housework and saw the button that says Wages for Housework, I thought of my mother. I thought of Nana. I thought of all of those women in the village. Some of you know this story, that my family was divided and my sister and I wound up staying with an aunt in Brooklyn who happened to our good fortune, to be an activist in the civil rights movement and in Brooklyn Core. Also, we, because of the movement for federation in the what was then called the West Indies, the Caribbean region, we all knew about C.L.R. James because we would listen to the men in particular, because they had a lot of time to debate. The women were busy doing housework, you know, all of what was involved in that. Talk about him and talk about that movement for federation, the unity in the West Indies that we were so sad to lose. So when I heard about C.L.R. James coming to through New York City, I would go to hear him speak. And I'll have to say, I understood what he was saying, as opposed to a lot of the revolutionary leftist friends I would be part of reading and study groups. None of it identified my experience or the experience of my mother, the experience of women in my village, as anything to do with politics. Politics was something else. That changed when I met Selma James. And in fact, it changed when I read, before meeting Selma, when I read Sex, Race, and Class by Selma James. And if you read the anthology, I did the introduction of Our Time Is Now, you'll see that I argued for a while that Selma just couldn't be white. She had to be Black, because she couldn't have been that clear, especially on the issue of race. And of course, I was proved wrong. She had good training in the anti-racist movement, the global anti-racist movement, along with her then husband, C.L.R. James. After I left the public school system in New York, I had the fortune of being hired into the SEEK program at the City University of New York. And the SEEK program was a program, it was part of what was won in the struggle for open admissions in the City University of New York, welfare mothers being very much part of that struggle, by the way, even though that's very much hidden. And the SEEK program was specific for low-income students, for students who had to really catch up and be able to compete in a four-year university situation. In the SEEK program, a lot of the faculty, that's where I met Ndiaye, the great late Ndiaye from Guyana. That's also where I met the co-founder of Black Women for Wages for Housework with me, Wilmette Brown, brilliant woman who was a former Panther and who had went to the continent to work with African liberation movements and had returned to make the movement in the US when I met her. There were many others who were also at the SEEK program, including the woman who founded, one of the founders of the Lesbian History Archives and others. We started a women's study group, and right away, this was after we had run into a table of women who were in New York, who were involved in Wages for Housework. And a huge debate and fight broke out about Wages for Housework. And myself and my co-founder of Black Women for Wages for Housework were kind of accused of being gladiators for Wages for Housework. I just have to say this too, that it was really when eventually I went to London and was able to meet Selma James, that I was able to see that my experience as an immigrant, my experiences in my village, right? My experience as a Black woman, that all of this was a political experience. Frankly, I didn't really relate to any of it, but I definitely related to sex, race, and class. And I definitely related to Wages for Housework, given my experience in my village, but also in Ocean Hill, Brownsville. Selma referred to A Woman's Place. And it was really that book, A Woman's Place, and Sex, Race, and Class that got me interested in the Wages for Housework campaign. Also, I was a bit fed up coming out of a civil rights movement, coming out of the militant Black movement that was on the rise of like, how as a Black woman do I fit into this? I mean, you had a bunch of white in New York. We experienced some racism there. The New York City and the Italian branch, so to speak, of the Wages for Housework, people who identified with Wages for Housework, because we knew of the anti-racist training that Selma James had. We knew of her work. We knew of C.L.R. James's work. And I was still skeptical. I was skeptical of white folks and white people, in all honesty, with you, and figure like, well, people had to really kind of prove themselves if indeed they were anti-racist and if they were going to be on my side. And I also noticed that in New York, the group started putting out information that reflected some of the work of the Black women, but we weren't credited with it. We weren't identified with it. And there's no way I was going into a majority white organization, it seemed at the time, without some level of autonomy. So Wilmette and I, we borrowed the money. I went to London, turned up outside Selma's house, had to see for myself if she was the real McCoy. And I'll have to say, if it were not for the deep anti-racism that Selma in her political life had been involved in, the Black movement, she had been involved in the anti-racist newsletter she was putting out, etc., and her work, likely Black Women for Wages for Housework never would have been formed. So even though there was interest by my other cohort in coming into the Wages for Housework campaign, it had to be on the basis of autonomy. It had to be on the basis that we were autonomous as Black women, because I came from the Caribbean region. My co-founder had roots also in Liberia on the continent. So we were kind of a mini international in and of itself. But it was really Selma working with the autonomous organizations, with us working with each other. The prisoners' rights movement in the United States, they have a phrase that says, nothing about us without us. And I think in so many ways, Selma, that kind of expresses the importance of autonomy and what some of those who are still writing or claiming the campaign as part of their history never really understood. And that's one of the reasons that they get confused, that you could have all of these autonomous organizations speaking in their own voice, but being together, right, in this campaign, the Wages for Housework campaign and the Global Women's Strike.
People who are personally ambitious, they like separatism. They like to tell you that the people you're working with, that's not the ones you need. You need people who look only like me, or who have only my sexual choice, or only anything, because that means only he or she will go forward on the basis of a movement which they have not built or have not paid attention to. And that's one thing. Ambition is the enemy, not only of autonomy, but of the movement. Ambition is using the movement to move yourself forward up the ladder, but nobody else goes up, only you and maybe one or two of your friends. We're also very wise about the NGOs. You know, we've worked with Haiti and supported Haiti because we believe that they have done a fantastic thing. They started and really led the struggle against slavery in the Americas, and they've never been given the credit that they deserve, certainly by governments who want to subvert them. They don't like that those autonomous Haitians who refuse slavery and fight to this day to continue to not be slaves and to keep their independence, they've never let them off the hook. And every woman who came into Wages for Housework, into the campaign, brought with her a whole experience and changed the nature of the campaign. Every individual helped to build our understanding, our power, and the breadth of our campaigning. And nothing was more truly that than Black Women for Wages for Housework, which changed its name to Women of Color, because in 2000, when a number of organizations updated their names to be more inclusive and more modern, the world was changing. Why we keep it? Because it did it. It made the break. It spearheaded the Wages for Housework campaign in many respects. Nevertheless, Women of Color talks about the Thai women, involves the Thai women and the Indian women, and a great campaign in India against rape, especially by farm workers and others. They do fantastic work there. We hope to be bringing more of that to you. One thing that we all shared at the did not want to replace the state with ourselves, ever, any of us. We wanted to change the world, not join the hierarchy at the top. And we did not accept in membership women who did not want wages for housework for themselves. They say, well, for the poor or something. No, that's really not where it's at. We had some women from high positions, but they were women who knew that their high position was shaky as long as the rest of us were dependent and impoverished. And they fought with us because they were fighting for themselves. And that's what we wanted to see. You all had a fantastic victory with the movement for welfare, which was so crucial. The single mother movement in the UK and in other countries is quite strong. And in the US, there was a massive women's movement, but it was led by Black people, Black women. And therefore, the feminists did not acknowledge this massive women's movement. But of course, Black Women for Wages for Housework was part of that movement. And you did that thing in 1977, which was truly fantastic. You want to tell people about that?
Selma, as you were talking about the difference between separatism and autonomy, I mean, coming from the Caribbean region where the majority, I think about 97% of the population is Black, we weren't confused to think that because somebody is Black, it meant they were on our side. There were plenty of scabs who were Black. The Haitian population, the same thing. If you look at Baby Doc and Papa Doc, a dark-skinned Black man. So people who run around with this idea that, you know, people who are on the same color of your skin are the ones that are on your side clearly aren't looking at the Haitian experience, clearly are not looking at reality. And you're right, a lot of them use color as a way to guilt trip other people, to guilt trip other movements, push people around. And that has nothing to do with autonomy. And it also has nothing to do with winning. It has nothing to do with undermining this capitalist hierarchy that keeps us all down, but really in putting themselves forward. If you're going to be ambitious for the movement. Be ambitious to put a movement forward and to build the movement. The men started complaining, the men in the left, like, what's the matter with you women? You want to go off and meet on your own? You're going in the women's center, they're a bunch of lesbians. We said, we don't care if they're a bunch of lesbians. Maybe we could develop some alternatives to y'all. But anyway, we wrote, quote, we should meet as women because these are things that affect us directly. If the men were here, we would have to spend a lot of time explaining things, time we women have little of. We will take time to explain things to the men, to everyone, and see what they want to do. But there are things that we have to be the ones to do. We are at the bottom. They must listen to us for a change. And then we also said, we in the Queen's College Women's Action Group refuse to be driven back into our homes without a cent. And we refuse to be trapped into low-wage jobs. As women, we already have one full-time job, housework. For us, being a student means taking the burden of housework with us, giving us two full-time unwaged jobs. Winning welfare brought us one stop closer to winning a wage for housework. Winning a Sikh stipend brought us one step closer to winning a wage for the work we do as students. Then we said, going to school is work. The stipend is not a charity, it's a wage. No wage cuts, no more work. And that was December 21st, 1976, a handwritten document right here that then showed up and I'm sure will be part of the archive. So Selma, I think that underscores what you have been talking about in terms of the practical movement building, not just some idea, but how it is put into practice. And then the work that we did in Houston, Texas with the great leaders of that great women's movement, the welfare rights movement, the National Welfare Rights Organization, back in 1965, Johnny Tillman, a Black woman out of South Los Angeles, who served as president of the National Welfare Rights Organization, said, quote, "If I were president, I'd start paying women a living wage for doing the work we're already doing, child raising and housekeeping, and the welfare crisis would be over," just like that. And she wasn't a separatist. She said housewives would be getting great wages too. And it was with Johnny Tillman, Beulah Saunders out of New York, that Black Women for Wages for Housework, the Wages for Housework campaign, worked together at the first congressionally mandated conference ever for women. This was during the UN Women's Decade. And we threw out a resolution that was a workfare resolution that required women, took away the right to welfare, required women to get a job outside the home in order to get welfare. We threw it out, we rewrote it, we opposed workfare, and we said that women receiving welfare should have the dignity of it being called a wage. How we won that, by the way, because we were up against a lot, is that the Southern women, the Mississippi delegation, sat behind the New York delegation. They saw us running around with our aprons that said, "Every mother is a working mother." And then they came over to find out what this is all about. We spoke about that. But I could tell you, when that welfare resolution came up for a vote, and Beulah had already threatened the feminists, she was like, "Y'all better boogaloo down and stand up when this welfare resolution comes up." So she was working them. I was doing the work with the Southern delegations. When Mississippi stood up, Alabama, Tennessee, all of those Southern states stood up. They stood with Black welfare mothers. And that was a victory that we won in a bipartisan manner. That was a different time than it is now. And I'm on the board today of the National Welfare Rights Organization. And they insist on being multiracial. They don't want any business to do with separatism. And it was because of them that Martin Luther King began the Poor People's Campaign, the first Poor People's Campaign. There's now a second Poor People's Campaign that's going on now. And it was when King met with Beulah and Johnny Tillman and them, and they said, "Dr. King, if you don't know what's going on with us, you better listen." And he listened to them. And as a result, we got the Poor People's Campaign and his focus on economic justice. But the mainstream feminists, as we call them, they never acknowledge this movement, Selma, as you always have insisted on. This was a women's movement. It was led by Black and brown women, but it was a multiracial movement. It is still here today.
Well, I think I first have to say that it was Bristol Black Women for Wages for Housework that really was able to help you all to prepare for Houston and for the great victory that you had there, which has meant so much to us, because what it meant is, if you begin with the work that women are doing, they respond, and that you say, this work is vital, this work is the central, or should be the central work of society, caring for each other, caring for the planet, you know, that this is where the income should be going. It's not that mothers should be deprived, it's that mothers should be enriched, and all the farmers who work hard to prepare the food and to protect the environment, they also are entitled to an income. Finally, in 1995 in Beijing, when Andai, she was part of the government delegation of CARICOM, Caribbean Commission, and she helped us to win the resolution that women's unremunerated work, that's the big word they use at the UN, that work on the land, in the community, and in the home be measured and valued. And that was passed because we organized, Margaret, you're a brilliant organizer, 1,200 organizations, which really represented thousands, if not millions, of women supporting our moves at the UN, saving the planet a lot of the work that women do is precisely that.
We're going to take a short station break, and when we return, we'll continue to hear from the conversation between Selma James and myself. Welcome back to Sojourner Truth. If you're a member of Facebook, you can like and friend us on Facebook. Our handle on Instagram and Twitter at So True Radio. Let's give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners, because we are available on SoundCloud nationwide and worldwide. And today we'd like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Southern Illinois. And internationally, we would like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in India. But now let us continue to hear that conversation between Selma James and myself that marked the 50th anniversary of the founding of the Wages for Housework campaign. Yeah, and Selma, picking up on what you were saying, the talk about movement building, to get that UN resolution to the language that we finally got in 1995, and now I understand it's integrated into some UN Sustainable Development Goal. We never would have thought that. And but we did that because we built a movement. I mean, so many of the women in the UK, in the US, Sydney and Anne and Kay and Sarah and everybody were involved in building and circulating that Women Count Women's Work petition that got so many signatures that we then took to Nairobi in 1995. And with the support of some of the African nations, we got through, because the United States was opposing it. And the countries of the Global South were saying, look, this is a women's issue, we know, but most of the work done in the Global South is unpaid, unwaged work. And then they look at us as though we're charity cases when we're not. And then in 1995, we did go with the backing of 1,200 non-governmental organizations worldwide. It did represent millions of women. And we were a multiracial delegation of about 56 or 57 of us from around the world. And we lucked out with, and Daye fought, I think, to be part of that CARICOM delegation, and CARICOM didn't object. But you remember how intense the work was, and Daye was on the inside. Selma, you were on the outside. I was running back and forth and saying, here's the latest language, Selma, look at it. Make sure that it's exactly what we want. The comma is in the right place. It was really that kind of collaboration, included doing civil disobedience in China, in a UN building, a silent protest. Remember that? So all of that was part and parcel.
It was very effective.
It was very effective of winning that resolution. So you know what I mean? It didn't just happen, as you know, some people would like to say. I read somewhere recently that the UN happened to do this language. Well, the UN did it because we grassroots women were there making sure that they did it. One other thing I wanted to raise too is that UN resolution, Selma, get back to the interrelationship with the care income. We said, count and value the work in the home, on the land, and in the community. So the work on the land was there. So when you all, you and Nina and others, ran into Stefania and them working on the Green New Deal for Europe and had a care income in it, it was just a natural, in a way, continuum, and really broadened what we had always been, you know, finding our way towards. We were talking a lot about the work we do in the home, but we knew when we discovered in the UN Women's Decade how much work, as you said earlier, Selma, women were doing to feed the world, particularly in the Global South, in Latin America and Africa, you know, et cetera. The other thing, though, that I just want to highlight, and this is particular for women of color in the US, but also internationally, is the justice work. The yes. justice work that women do, you know, the U.S. has the highest rate of incarceration of any nation in the entire world, disproportionately Black and brown, disproportionately impacted. What the Black Lives Matter movement, I'm talking about the broader movement, not the specific organizations, after that horrific public lynching of George Floyd, and the whole world rose up and said, absolutely no, Black Lives Matter. And really having to explain to some people that when we say Black Lives Matter, what we're saying is that if Black lives don't matter, the lives of none of us matters. And that's absolutely the case. There's just a case in, I can't remember what state now, of a white guy whose neck they sat on. And he was, the first thing out of his mouth was, I can't breathe, right? So they come for us today, they're coming for other people tomorrow. But the work, so much of the caring work that we do as women also is this justice work, not only on behalf of our children who are imprisoned, but the justice work that the welfare mothers have done for decades in the communities, whether it was in Ocean Hill, Brownsville, in winning open admissions in City University or whatever, all of this justice work that we do that isn't valued and isn't counted either. And the thing about Clotilde is Clotilde was organizing with domestic workers. And so is our network in Lima, Peru, are doing that. You know, count the work that we do in the home and the work we do in other people's homes. And the what we launch on the 8th of March with this survey with women, I think, from about 13 or 14 countries speaking out about it, with Mai from Thailand, the woman from Myanmar, talking about the importance of the care income and valuing the work, given the great repression they're facing in Myanmar, given what's happening in Thailand and other parts of the world. It's just the work of building this movement. So when we talk about 50 years, we're not tired, Selma. We're inspired, right? And we set out, as you said, not to discuss wages for housework as something we write about and theorize about. We wanted the money. And my late mother, to her credit, she always said, Margaret, I want my money. And then we would come to New York, to the UN, to lobby and all of that. We would stay at her place. She'd make everybody the famous Bajan codfish cakes and really encourage us on, because it's our money. We have created it. We have created the wealth of the whole damn world, and we want our money back. We want the society, a totally different society, focuses on the caring of people and the planet. And we intend to keep going until we get it. And I'm glad to see some of the young folks out on here, the next generation of people that are going to be taking up this fight, whether it's the child tax credit or so much more. So Selma, we so appreciate what you started out to do and put forward in, when was it, 1972? And that booklet that you did, and the network that we have now built together. Just wanted to lift that up and to thank you for your work and to giving voice to so many of us, including me. People thought I was just some little villager idiot, right? Not political, don't have much to say. And Selma was like, I want to hear what she has to say. What do you think That's about right. this? What do you think about that? Okay. So she has found a way to give voice of so many of us. And that really takes a love of the people. It takes a love of the movement. It takes skill, delegation, dedication, empathy, and love. I wanted to lift that up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Margaret. There are just a couple of things that have to be said. And one of them is that what has been offered us is a double day. And many of us have done that, many millions, but we're exhausted from that. And we're fed up that the children we fight so hard to feed, we have no time to spend with. And women are beginning to speak about that, and men too. And I have to mention Payday, a network of men in the US and the UK, which has stuck with us, which has fought good battles alongside us, which has worked for prisoners, which has worked for refuseniks, those who refused to fight their wars, were involved in another war now. Can I just say about that we hear the things that are happening, terrible things that are happening to people in the Ukraine, terrible. And the same things happened when the US and the UK invaded Iraq, but we never heard about what was being done there to the people. Or when Palestine, when Gaza was bombed, we never heard that that happened to the, that's what they, the Palestinians suffered, like that, worse than that, year after year after year. We don't want any country to face that. We don't want Russia to, the Russian women and children and men to be killed by bomb. We don't want any of it. We want this way of dealing with the environment, because it's really bad. You know, the military is the worst thing for the environment that we have. And we are pointing also to the subsidies that are given to fossil fuels of all kinds. The ones that we are trying to abolish, they are feeding with money. So we don't want the double day. We want to have jobs that suit us, that suit our responsibilities, women and men. And we want pay equity. And that's part of what a global women's strike movement for a care income would be able to provide, is you don't need the job. You can take the job unless you raise the price per hour to a reasonable sum. We've been offered the second double day as if that were a liberation, but there is no liberation through capitalist work, and we all know that. What we want is a change in the world, beginning with caring. Invest in caring, not killing, has been our slogan all this time.
Right, Salma, I neglected to say, and Nina and others, that we have congratulations and greetings from the actress Mimi Kennedy in the U.S., an Irish woman.
Oh, wow.
And some people in the U.S. will know her name. She's still a working actor on television. I think she's in some series called Mothers or Mothering or something like that. And also the actor and activist, Danny Glover, who is now tomorrow going to be receiving a special Oscar. They're finally recognizing him and wow, giving him an honorary Oscar. And he has been a friend. He's been with the Women's Center in London, England. He has been a friend and a fan for so very long. And he sends his congratulations on the 50th as well. Thank you.
That's lovely to hear that. We remember him very well at Crossroads Women's Center when he came here and we had the events with him. He was great.
Right. Absolutely.
Can I just say, I just wondered if you could, I mean, I'm very glad, Margaret, that you raised all that you raised about the money. And I think you said your mother said she wanted the money. Was it your mom? Anyway, because yeah, that's exactly how we feel in the Wages for Housework campaign. In fact, you cannot join the Wages for Housework campaign unless you want wages for housework for yourself. We're not do-gooders. We believe in that money, that financial independence, that financial recognition for caring work. But there has been a lot of hostility to that, you know, all the way from Eleanor Rathbone, who fought for family allowance. You know, which Selma always, you always speak about her, and we've done quite a lot of work on that. She, you know, she faced hostility to women, working class women, getting mothers, getting money in their hands. And I know we're fighting for child tax credit now in the US. And the fact that, again, it's not specific that it should go to mothers, and they've just cut it. And we are fighting to get it reinstated so that all mothers actually get it. But I just wondered, Selma, if you could say a bit more about that, because that is what we face with the care income. Stefania, who has been working with us, put a note saying, thank you for turning the care income upside down. And I have to say that Stefania has been fantastic in fighting for the care income. And one of the things that she makes absolutely clear is that women need the money, that the women who are doing that caring work need that money.
That's right. That's right. And
but there has been a lot of hostility, and I think sometimes people are surprised, from a whole strand of professional feminism, establishment feminism, to that. And I wondered if you wanted to say a bit more on that.
I do, because I have worried for years, why do they hate us so? Why do they oppose us at every turn? These are women who are producing the whole human race and taking all the time of their lives and fighting for other people and caring for other people. And these people, they will not back the mothers. They will not back the carers. And finally, it occurred to me, well, I have to tell you, it occurred to me today, they don't want us to have that power, because if we do, we'll turn the world upside down. We will refuse any money to go to war. We will refuse any money. The man who is making the budget, which is going to really squeeze us in the UK, that guy, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, is the richest man in Parliament. He's a billionaire, and he's telling us how little we can live on. How dare he? We have a right as the mothers, as the producers, as the carers, as the protectors, as all who work for life, as the growers of food, all who work for life and for the life of the planet. We have a right to an income. We have the first right to that income for the work that we are doing all around the world. And we are stronger after 50 years than we were in 1972. Caring is on the agenda. After this pandemic, everybody knows that the difference between life and death is often, very often, the carer. You call the caregiver in the US, I know. And it's those who are ill at home, those who are ill in hospital, those who are caring for other people. And that caring, that is a relationship. We are saying that our relationships must be caring relationships. And this is how we, as the carers, are expressing our wish and our struggle to change the world and to save the planet. There isn't much time. We hope there is any time at all, because it's very touch and go right now. But we work in the movement to save the planet, partly because we struggle for the living and for all that live, for the animals, for the plants, for the trees, for the climate, and for the people, all the people, from the bottom up. And women coming together in a movement which is so strong and so soundly based, so much based on humane considerations, you know, that can do wonders. We feel that we're part of a greater movement throughout the world for this planet and for this species and for every species to survive for a better day.
That's what COVID exposed. They were shocked. A lot of the women in careers were stunned that they had to be home and take care of their kids, because, you know, the nanny wasn't there, the domestic worker wasn't there, the low-wage worker wasn't there, because it's all that work that makes it possible to go out and then do that work. And then the whole lie that to be a worker, we have to be exploited in some job outside the home. And we want to get rid of exploitation. So there's some who don't want to get rid of exploitation. It works in their favor, including some women. And I think that's part of the reason for the hostility. I mean, the fight now around the child tax credit, you mentioned it. You know, there are those still in the mainstream feminist movement that want us to focus only on providing childcare, you know, outside of the home. We're not against people, women having childcare, but they would prefer to do all of the supports to make it easier for women, quote unquote, to go out and get a job, as opposed to really undermine and destroy these exploitative structures and relationships. And one of the things that we touched on is using the state against the state, because that is something that we have done. The work we did in the UN was an example of that. I mean, the UN is no revolutionary organization. We all know that. So I think that when you are at the bottom and you're struggling for your life, and you are very aware that you could be sold out at any moment, you have to have your eyes in front of you, behind you, at the side of you, all around your head, to know where you're going and who you're going with, who you could rely on, who you can't rely on, and who's likely to sell you out. We don't have the luxury of saying, we don't want to have anything to do with Maxine Waters in relation to Haiti because she's an elected official. We can't afford that. No. That, you know, I hate that word privilege, but that if there's one use of that word, it's got to be there. We have to know how to use the state against the state without becoming the state. That really takes being part of a movement. It's very hard to do that when you're an individual, a lot of individuals out there trying to do the right thing. It's really the interaction and the discussions. My cousin, Martha Prescott Noonan, who is one of those SNCC women and was in the South, you know, they were being shot at, killed, et cetera. And she talks about how they would try something and it didn't work. They would go back to the SNCC office and say, okay, well, that didn't work. What are we going to do now? And they would sit down and discuss it among themselves. And when we do events and we do evaluations and we look at what worked and what didn't work, that is so valuable in terms of building the movement, in terms of accountability, and also smelling the individual careerism as opposed to those who want the movement to win, who want the money for themselves. And I don't just mean money at the expense of other people, because people get mixed up with that. Oh, you want money, you must be a capitalist. I don't bloody well think so, because we know very well that if the caring of people and the environment are prioritized, it would do away with that kind of hierarchy as opposed to reinforce it. So I just wanted to mention that point about the state against the state.
Selma, I wondered if you wanted to say something about the care industry that's developing.
Well, the
Hi,
point
I'm Dr.
is
Demento. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO's end of year drive is happening right now. We invite you to become a member today by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to the number 44.